This is KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep, here with local and statewide news. Juneau has a new emergency manager. Ryan O'Shaughnessy took over the role earlier this year. He first stepped in to help the city and borough of Juneau's emergency management department after 2024's glacial outburst flood.
I was, watching the special assembly meeting on Tuesday, August 6th. And heard that there was some concern about who would be managing long-term recovery, volunteer management, donation management, and all of those things.
So he called and said he wanted to help coordinate volunteer efforts as a volunteer himself. Then this February, he was hired to lead the city's emergency management team. He says he spent the last few months getting up to speed on the city's capacity for emergency management and building relationships with other organizations who help in emergencies, like Tlingit and Haida's public safety team. And for O'Shaughnessy, the work is personal.
I have been on both sides of emergency management.
In 2022, a landslide hit O'Shaughnessy's house in downtown Juneau. He says seeing the community respond to that disaster planted a seed for his work today.
I wouldn't say that at that moment it was like, oh, I need to be involved in this. But long term, it definitely had a pretty profound impact.
Right now, the city is preparing for Juneau's annual glacial outburst flood, which has happened at the beginning of August for the past 2 years. Floods in the Mendenhall Valley have reached record-breaking levels for 2 years in a row. O'Shaughnessy says the city continues to improve its response and communication with residents during the annual event. He strongly encourages Juneau residents to sign up for emergency alerts at juneau.org. Former emergency planning manager Tom Matisse remains with the department in a specialized role focused on avalanche forecasting. The city's emergency team is also currently updating its risk assessment plans. Residents can comment on those plans at a public meeting this Monday at 5:30 p.m. A mandate to sell millions of acres of public land was struck from the Republican budget reconciliation bill that's moving through the U.S. Senate this week. That's after the Senate parliamentarian ruled on Monday that the public land sales don't clearly affect the budget. But as KFSK's Olivia Rose and KTOO's Alex Solomon report, some parcels of land might make it back into the bill.
2 days before the parliamentarian's ruling, dozens of people gathered on a remote Prince of Wales Island beach to send a message to lawmakers, taking a picture with a large wooden board painted with three red words, "Not for sale."
When we were holding that sign, I think we all felt upset that this was happening for reasons that we didn't understand.
Elsa Sebastian lives in a small community near Port Protection. It's a remote area surrounded by the flora and fauna of the Tongass National Forest. And she says that's why people live here.
It's our way of life. It's being able to continue to hunt and fish and play and explore and find ourselves in these places.
Sebastian says the lack of public engagement from lawmakers felt like a betrayal of trust, and privatizing parts of the Tongass would significantly affect rural communities like hers.
We need ultimate transparency when it comes to decisions around our public lands.
U.S. Senator Mike Lee, a Utah Republican, added the proposal to the mega bill that would have required the U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management to sell off roughly 2 to 3 million acres of land across the West. National parks, monuments, and other protected lands were excluded, but millions of acres in Alaska could have been eligible for those sales, including sections of the Tongass and Chugach National Forests and parts of the interior. Republicans said selling the land would allow it to be developed into affordable housing, but much of the identified public lands are unsuited for housing development. The Senate parliamentarian decided that this mandate breaks a rule ensuring that reconciliation bills like this one focus on fiscal issues and not unrelated policy changes, so the section was struck down. But lawmakers are rewriting the proposal to include just BLM lands near towns.
Senator Murkowski's communications director Joe Plesha said Wednesday that bill language is currently evolving, but that the new focus is on selling public lands purely for housing, and that this would include a review process. According to reporting from The Hill, somewhere between 600,000 and 1.2 million acres of BLM land would now be for sale nationwide. The Forest Service and BLM declined to comment on pending legislation, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which manages the Forest Service, did not respond. Kate Glover is a Juneau-based attorney at Earth Justice, an environmental law firm. She says the Forest Service and BLM already have the authority to sell or exchange land under current laws.
But in those cases, the agencies have to take a look at the public interest and decide whether it makes sense to sell the land or not.
She says what's different about a mandate is that it would require sales, whether they are in the public interest or not. Also, Glover says that selling steep and rugged public lands won't solve the affordable housing problem because many of those areas are not connected to existing infrastructure.
It's more likely that that's going to allow for building new mansions and second homes for people from out of state.
Josh Hicks is the director of conservation campaigns for the Wilderness Society in Denver, Colorado. The environmental group published a map showing swaths of land that could qualify for sales under the original bill, fueling an outcry on social media. Hicks says that the idea of selling off public lands is widely unpopular.
We're seeing people from across this political spectrum in opposition to this proposal. A lot of folks in the sporting community who go and hunt and fish in our public lands absolutely are rising up.
Some Republican representatives from Colorado, Idaho, and Montana even spoke out against the sell-off. Congressman Nick Begich, who voted for the bill in the House, did not respond to a request for comment. Senator Dan Sullivan, who has indicated support for public land sales in Alaska, also did not respond. Amendments to the bill have not yet been made public, and it's unclear whether revised public land sales will be approved by the parliamentarian. Senate Republicans are aiming to vote on the bill by July 4. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And in Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
Governor Mike Dunleavy told lawmakers yesterday he had vetoed a bill that would have sharply limited payday loans in Alaska. Senate Bill 39, which passed the legislature on a bipartisan vote of 38-32, looked to cap interest rates for so-called deferred deposit advance loans at 36%. Backers of the bill, including the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, say it's an effort to curtail what they describe as predatory loans. Claire Lubke is the group's Economic Justice League lead.
We know that payday loan customers in Alaska are taking out over five payday loans per year, even though they're marketed as one-time emergency assistance. And we know that this causes cycles of debt in which people are taking out one loan and then another trying to get out from what they originally borrowed.
Democratic Anchorage Senator Forrest Dunbar sponsored the bill, which passed along caucus lines in the Senate. Three minority Republicans joined the multi-party coalition controlling the House to pass the bill in the lower chamber. Opponents of the bill say it would unnecessarily limit consumers' choices and reduce loan options for borrowers with poor credit. Andrew Duke leads the Online Lenders Alliance, a financial technology group that opposed the bill.
The proponents were trying to paint a picture that if you enact this bill and put more restrictions in place, lenders will just keep making loans to the same borrowers at lower costs. That is patently false.
Dunleavy declined an interview request but made a similar case in his veto message. A variety of other states have similar limits on payday lending. The federal government also restricts it for active duty military members. Lawmakers can override Dunleavy's veto with a two-thirds majority vote. That could prove difficult since proponents would have to pick up at least two more Republican votes to override the veto. And a Haines guide died on Sunday during a non-work-related rafting trip on the Blanchard and Tatshenshini Rivers. The guide, Marin Pitt, was 33 years old, a Montana resident, and had more than a decade of rafting and guiding experience. She moved to Haines this spring to work for Chilkat Guides. Pitt was part of a group of 24 people on a personal trip, according to a statement released Thursday by the Yukon Coroner's Service. When the four rafts flipped at the confluence of the two rivers, Pitt did not survive. Chilkat Guides said in a statement that the group was experienced and prepared and that all safety protocols were followed. The statement added that Pitt was a beloved team member and that their hearts are with her family, friends, and the guiding community. Russ Lyman is a longtime local guide who helps train guides in the spring. He's not currently employed by Chilkat and wasn't on this trip, but he has run the same section of river several times. He says the trip has become somewhat of an annual occurrence.
For the last several years, it's happened every year around this time when it's when that part of the river is running high because it's really exciting. Of course, it's also when it's most dangerous.
Lyman says the trip is typically a three-hour run between the Alaska-British Columbia border and Dalton Post, and that it has class 3 and class 4 rapids. And the ballot measure that increases the minimum wage in Alaska and requires paid sick leave becomes law next week. But business leaders don't yet have a clear outline of the rules to follow. That's because in May, Governor Mike Dunleavy announced an administrative order that paused new regulations in order to save the state money. Sarah Oates Harlow is the president of the Alaska Cabaret Hotel Restaurant and Retailers Association, or CHAR. She says the hospitality industry is heavily impacted by ballot measure one and that the lack of regulations is causing confusion for businesses in the industry.
We're about to see this massive piece of statute become effective with so much ambiguity and confusion for the industry. Businesses across the state are frustrated, scared. They're terrified about what enforcement's going to look like.
Harlow says the organization has fielded a flurry of inquiries about the law since voters approved it in the November election, including how the law applies to minors and if employees can cash out unused sick leave. On July 1st, the law increases the state's minimum wage to $13, allows workers to accrue sick leave, and bans employers from punishing employees who decline to attend political or religious meetings. The State Department of Labor and Workforce Development expects the regulations to be out for a 30-day public comment period by the end of June. Harlow says she's optimistic that will give business owners some clarification, but she says it's not ideal.
The regulations process is long, and, you know, having drafts out there for public comment doesn't mean that that's actually what's going to become adopted and go into effect. Those regulations won't be effective until, you know, until the fall at the earliest.
A bill that would have exempted businesses with 15 or fewer employees from paying sick leave and dropped seasonal workers from the requirement is pending in the House. And in Juneau, it's currently 59 degrees and overcast. Tonight, there are showers likely, and it will drop as low as 49 degrees. But things will stay in the 50s through the rest of the week into the weekend, with rain in the forecast. This is KTOL.